I'm Sarah Tinsley. We're going to get started with the afternoon. I work at Moffitt Cancer Center in the Department of Malignant Hematology. I used to always tell people how many years I worked at Moffitt, but then you might be able to do the math and realize I'm pretty old. So let's just say I've been at Moffitt for over 20 years. And during that whole time that I've worked at Moffitt Cancer Center, I've taken care of patients who have hematologic malignancies. Initially, I worked in the blood and marrow transplant program as a registered nurse and then became a nurse practitioner. And more recently, I've worked in the Department of Malignant Hematology. At Moffitt, they separate bone marrow transplant from heme malignancies. So I see patients before and after transplant. I see AML and lots of myelodysplastic syndrome. Sandy Curtin is the primary author on this Building Blocks of Hope. And it's really geared to help patients learn who are diagnosed with myelodysplastic syndrome and their families and their caregivers to really learn more about the disease and how to cope with living with myelodysplastic syndrome. And so I'm presenting today on behalf of the International Nurse Leadership Board from the Myelodysplastic Syndrome Foundation. They flew me in last night. And so I thank them for inviting me to come and talk to you. So let's get started. This is a list of all of the nurses from around the world. And really, it is an international effort. We wrote the Building Blocks of Hope together. There were different pieces that I wrote that's part of this. And you'll see that Sandy Curtin also has a study that you can participate in. We're also moving forward. It's not in this presentation, but if any of you have a mixed myelodysplasia with myeloproliferative neoplasm, we're also writing a myeloproliferative neoplasm section so that you'll be able, if you have one of those overlap syndromes, that you'll be able to understand your disease if you have both of those. So let's get started. So we want you really to become a partner in your care and build your MDS plan with your MDS manager. And that's a part of your booklet and your Building Blocks of Hope. And I'll go over that with you. So we know that it's very scary to be diagnosed with a disorder or a cancer. Some people are really shocked to learn that we do consider this a cancer. I've been doing this so long that when we didn't always call this cancer. And so I had to change my dialogue, my teaching with patients from, no, you don't have cancer, to, well, yes, we do consider this a cancer. And so it is scary. It's also rare, which means when you try to explain it to, I'm sure you all have better experience at this than me, that when you try to explain it to your friends and family members, they look at you like, are you speaking English? What did you say you have? You know, it's a big word. It's complicated. It doesn't follow the normal staging systems like they have for solid tumors. When a person says they have breast cancer, everyone pretty much knows what breast cancer is or prostate cancer is, but myelodysplastic syndromes is quite a mouthful, and it's really complicated for a lot of people to understand that aren't even aware that their blood cells are made in their bone marrow. So we're glad that you're here, and we want to help you learn about your disease like you've already been doing all day, committing your Saturday to come and learn more about it. But we want to help you live with myelodysplastic syndrome. So there are tools and strategies for success. You want to maximize each of your treatment options. You heard about all of the treatments that are, you heard about the category one, and how we think of myelodysplastic syndrome as low risk and high risk primarily, and that over time they can evolve into acute myeloid leukemia. And you want to become a partner in that journey and really learn all that you can about myelodysplastic syndrome. We also recognize the very big piece that each of your caregivers play in your success as you go through this journey. And we want to take care of the caregivers too, because, you know, if you don't have the support you need, it's very hard to make it through the journey. One of the criteria for actually undergoing a blood and marrow, a bone marrow transplant, is that you have to have a caregiver. So, you know, support is essential for a successful journey. We want you to really feel more comfortable. A lot of the women, and some of the men too in the group, aren't used to asking for help, but there's lots of people in your network. We're going to learn how to, there's a site where you can go and learn how to enlist other people that really want to help you in having, saving your energy up and helping you do some of those tasks that maybe are other people would be glad to help you with. And we want you to stay well and help build your MDS plan. So, and you can do that through exploring the building blocks of hope and learn how to track your progress in your MyMDS manager. So under tab 5 is that MyMDS plan, and that helps with the understanding the diagnosis of MDS and you and your caregiver taking an active part in the plan. So in some of these sections too, if you have them on your computer, you could print multiple copies, but if you're writing right in your book, then you would need more than what's just in your book. So you can download the MDS Manager and access the digital format. I'll give you time to look for that. I don't know how I got a blank screen. There you go. I always do that. It's one button down from forward, and it makes the screen go blank, and it gives you a moment of panic to see if you can hold it together. So the MDS Manager mobile app looks like this. It's on your smartphone and tablets, Apple iOS and Android. And in there, you can have your MDS profile. It has the IPSS revised score. So you can calculate your own IPSS score. You can download some of your bone marrow results and also look at your molecular profile, and it can help you learn what's a cytogenetic abnormality versus what is a molecular abnormality. You heard about SF3B1, TET2, all of these things that sound like something out of Star Wars that we're expected to really learn and incorporate into our everyday language. So you can help, this will help you learn which ones are molecular abnormalities and which ones are cytogenetic abnormalities. You can add your contacts, both for professional and personal people, all in one place. And something that's important to me is the symptom tracker. A lot of times when patients come in for their visit, I'll ask them how they're doing, and if they're tired of waiting, sometimes they'll just say, "I'm fine." Because they don't want the visit to be postponed anymore. They just want to get in and get out. But if you can have your symptoms tracked, and instead of just the day that you see the healthcare provider, you have more of a longitudinal look, like over the past month or past 2 weeks, to know what your symptoms have been. That way we can help meet your needs and help control your symptoms. It also has your medications in there, with reminder capabilities, like you can set times for it's time to take your medication. And this would be particularly helpful for your oral medications. The ones that you get at the doctor's office, of course, you don't need to be reminded, but you could build in your appointments to know when you would be due for your next cycle of treatment. Azacitidine and decitabine are usually given every 28 days for at least 4 to 6 cycles. So you could even program in, like, when you think you would be due for your next cycle to make sure that you're staying on track. And then you can upload reports to keep track, and it can sync with your calendar. I think someone's getting a phone call. So you want to be up on your own health, be your own advocate, take an active role, and feel empowered that you understand yourself better than the healthcare providers do. And so in this way, you can help us understand you better. If you keep track of your transfusions, a lot of times with your lower risk disease and even with your higher risk disease, knowing the frequency of your blood transfusions, that's a lot of how we determine if someone's having a response. If you're not doing a bone marrow biopsy after every so many cycles, one of the ways we know if you're having a response is knowing if the frequency of your blood transfusions is getting longer. That's one of the first signs. Or if your platelet count is getting higher, if you've ever had a platelet transfusion, those are like really important pieces of information. And whether or not you're neutropenic or have ever been neutropenic. And also when you get your differential part of your complete blood cell count, knowing what types of cells you have circulating. And of course, as the other two doctors were telling you, we're really looking to see all of it. But really, if you start having an increased percentage of blasts circulating in your peripheral blood, then that means things are going the wrong way. So you can monitor that and also be aware of it, even if you are not seeing a healthcare provider every time you get your blood drawn. And you want to have open and honest discussions with your healthcare team. And one of the things that I'm really studying, I just submitted an NIH grant, and I'm looking at decision making and that we make help patients make decisions that are in line with their goals. And the only way we can do that is if we have your input. So, and it takes having like frank discussions with your family members about, okay, what's the worst case scenario and what's the best case scenario? And would you ever want to have a transplant if this topic comes up for you? Or would you never want to have a transplant? And what do you value most, quality of life or survival? And really, I think most of us really want quality of life and survival, but we don't want to just live longer with a terrible quality of life, because that's considered torture. But the best treatment that gives you more time with the best quality of life. So some discussions like that about how you would plan for either event, whether the best outcome or the worst. And you want to prepare for each visit with your doctor. And this is really what I was talking about. Shared decision making helps the healthcare provider and you have the treatment that's best for you based on your preferences, goals, and values. And those really are important to incorporate into the your care plan, because it's not one size fits all. I know we talked about if you have high-risk disease, the Category 1 for azacitidine or decitabine, but it still is an individual choice. You're given the pros and the cons, and then you're the one that decides with the doctor what fits for you. What do you want? So you want to make the most of every office visit. You want to ask yourself, what do I want to get out of this visit? And write down the top three most important questions that you have for that office visit. And you put number one at the top of the list. And you know we're really busy. I try to give patients as much time as they need, but that's sometimes hard to accomplish in this healthcare system where patients are scheduled with me every 30 minutes. And if I take 2 hours with one person, you know what happens to the rest of the people in the waiting room. So most of us really enjoy taking care of patients, but if you can organize it, it will help you get the most out of your visit, and it will help us to meet your needs better. Let's see, does anybody have questions? Does anybody do this and it works great for them? Or do you ask questions and then we don't understand you? What you're trying to ask, that we speak a different language? You had a question.
Excuse me. I came in late, and I wanted to attend this part particularly. I'm a caregiver. I really don't have a strong sense, not of what this condition is, I do understand that, but the symptoms, the way a person feels. I have never met one person with MDS ever. I don't even know anybody who knows anybody with MDS. So I feel at a complete loss. Right. And I thought that this was going to be an opportunity for people to discuss as a caregiver and as a patient exactly what someone goes through. My husband was diagnosed a year ago.
Okay.
He's a low risk.
He's a low risk myelodysplastic syndrome. For low risk patients.
And he's old.
That's okay.
And he's old.
Most patients with myelodysplastic syndrome are over the age of 60, even in their 70s. So that's pretty common.
Keep going.
In 80s, you saw the bar graphs where the incidence increases up to like in the 80s is like the most common. But it's really fatigue is the primary, is the worst symptom that most patients have.
Okay, that's what I don't understand is fatigue. I mean, a person who's 80 years old is not going to have the same energy level. Right. My husband and I are close to the same age. Mm-hmm. And I see him saying things, something like, all of a sudden, I'm so tired. Is it a sudden onset? Is it a continuing? Is there a baseline?
Most patients with myelodysplastic syndrome that I take care of, and also in the, there are quality of life studies that show that fatigue is the most common symptom that impairs quality of life in patients diagnosed with myelodysplastic syndrome. It means they don't have enough energy to do the things that they want to do. And so we'll talk about strategies to help deal with the fatigue. There's only so much you can do. I mean, the transfusions, if you're anemic, can really help with the fatigue, but there's fatigue that's not always related to the degree of anemia.
That's correct.
Right. And so when you've done, when your hemoglobin is as good as it can be, then what else can you do? So that's part of my presentation.
Okay. Thank you.
And it's also in that booklet for Building Blocks of Hope. Yes.
There's been a lot of talk about fatigue and anemia with low red blood, but what about fatigue with low white blood counts?
Just in general, fatigue goes along with the disease.
Whether
you have anemia or not, patients with myelodysplastic syndrome have more fatigue when compared to people that are their age. You know, just having the diagnosis, fatigue is a part of it. And so that's difficult to try to incorporate into your new you with the diagnosis of myelodysplastic syndrome.
Excuse me, you keep using a term, but you don't define it.
You use a term that's not defined, fatigue.
Fatigue is tired, feeling
okay.
Tired.
So we're tired. Are you tired when you get home from work?
Yes, but the fatigue of MDS is different than other people's fatigue.
How?
Well, the underlying disease, the cytokines or these inflammation markers that go along with the disease make people fatigued.
You're describing, you're defining the word by using the word. So okay. I don't, I mean, maybe someone else here has. Excuse me?
You should have been here this morning.
And they described?
They talked about that a little more in depth, yes.
Sorry about that. I won't bore you any further.
Yes. I think they want to record what you say.
I found the difference between fatigue when, because you're tired, you've done a lot of work, and the fatigue that you suffer with the, what I call MDS, which is the abbreviation, is completely different. When you're tired because you've done something, all right, I'm tired, I'll sit down a few minutes and I'll be fine. The fatigue that you suffer with MDS is you're just exhausted, you just can't move anymore. You've got to just sit down and rest and rest, and then when you get up, you can move a little bit, But then again, especially when your hemoglobin is low, you spend most of your time just trying to rest and catch up with yourself. It's a different type of fatigue. You just, the whole body is numb. It just doesn't want to move. Your legs get tired, your back starts aching because you're too tired to move. That's the difference between the kind of fatigue you get with MDS.
From just being tired.
And when you're just plain tired. There's a different type of fatigue.
Thank you.
Yeah. And it has been described as even like most people, when you just have normal fatigue, when you rest, you get better, you have more energy. It's not always the same with myelodysplastic syndrome. All right. So you want to bring all of your important health information with you to all of your visits, your prescriptions. You want to ask questions about your over-the-counter medications. Some of these antioxidants and things like that could have an interference with your other, with some of the medicines that we're trying to treat you with, and could be contraindicated. And you do want to use your symptom tracker in the MDS manager. You can include doctor's visits from your cardiologist or your endocrinologist. Those two are probably real biggies as far as contributing to feeling so tired that you can't do anything, is if you have underlying cardiac disease and you have problems with your thyroid. But also, anemia has effects on your eyes, and your teeth are affected when you have anemia. And also, you know, when your neutrophils are low, that puts you at risk for infections, especially in the gum area and your GI tract. And we talked about your transfusion records. And when you leave your visit, you really want to make sure that you have a follow-up appointment and you know what the purpose of that visit is. Are they tracking your blast percentage? Or are they trying to see the stability of your blood counts or decline in your blood counts? And also, if you're having any new symptoms, you want to keep track of any referrals to other providers. And you always do want to listen carefully to the do's and don'ts.
I have a question.
Yes.
Well, two slides ago where you mentioned the vitamins and herbal remedies.
Yes.
And it's really a question for anybody here. Has anyone had any experience in using some of the things that you read about, like dandelion root or fish oil, or I think the doctor just mentioned mataki mushrooms? That's a question. Is that yes or no? Does anyone have any experience with that? And then it seems like the medical community, Dr. Goldberg, as well as the doctor that we go to that he knew, don't really have a lot of information about that. So, you know, the standard answer is, well, we don't want to take something that's going to contraindicate against mm-hmm. the medication and the plan mm-hmm. you're on. But at the same time, you kind of read that these things that could be helpful.
I think the biggest concern with supplements or complementary therapies is, do they have effect on your blood counts and do they increase your risk for infection? There is one that has been studied with breast cancer patients for managing fatigue, and it's American ginseng. The one problem that you could have with that is that it can make you more prone to bleeding. So if a person had a low platelet count, you wouldn't want to recommend American ginseng. But I have used that with a fair number of the patients that I see, more in patients who have myelofibrosis, who have more severe fatigue.
So we're talking about MDS. Do you know of any have you had any mm-hmm. patients in all your experience that someone just referenced that they've had success or they're feeling better or they're seeing a result from anything?
No, not really. Okay. Yes.
I heard of maitake mushrooms for platelets, and when my platelets were below 50, they were in the high 40s, let's say, sometimes even once it went into the 30s. So I bought the maitake mushroom. It's a liquid, and I would take maybe 25 drops, not what's on the bottle. It's, I just started out slowly, is what I'm trying to say, with the maitake. And it seems to really help with the platelets. I did my own little research. And just before I went for blood work, 2 days before and the day of, I took the maitake mushroom, and my platelets were up to 75 the one time, and in the high 60s the next time. Every other time along my chart, it had been, I get my blood work done about once a month, let's say. Mm-hmm. They had been in the 50s, right around 50, just above or just below. So it seems to work, but I don't know if there's any contraindications to that. So
I think that's the problem, is there's not well-designed studies. The one with American ginseng was performed in breast cancer patients. So we talked about doing a study at Moffitt with it. But really, we're hesitant to make any firm recommendations without doing the studies like they do in the clinical trials, where they look at the efficacy, how well does it work, and then what kind of problems do patients have when they take it, to know if it really works. And we really want to encourage you to continue to do the things that you love and continue to live. I think depression can be a part of this, especially if you lose function because you can't do what you used to do because you're so fatigued. So really having an honest discussion with your healthcare provider so that you get referred to the people that you need to be referred to help you, and to learn to manage and report symptoms and be an active participant. So what can you do to stay healthy? We know that lifestyle choices make a big difference in your overall physical and mental health. You want to help keep your immune system strong to help you fight any illnesses that could come along. And fitness really is a key factor. And I know when someone's really tired, if you tell them you need to exercise to combat the fatigue, it sounds like we're from another planet. But really, there are studies, not in MDS patients, but in other disease states, that continuing to move helps with the amount of fatigue that people have, when they've done studies, even with AML and transplant patients, so a similar disease state. And you really want to stay dehydrated. Being just a little bit dehydrated can contribute to fatigue. A good balanced diet. You want to limit or exclude alcohol intake and make sure you're getting enough calories. There's MyFitnessPal has an app where you can document. They have all of these neat activity trackers to see how many steps you take in a day, what your heart rate is, how much fluid you take in, how many food, what types of foods, and whether you're missing any of your key nutrients. It does take some effort on your part. The fitness trackers, you just wear them and make sure it stays charged, that you don't lose your charge. But in MyFitnessPal, you can actually see how many calories you're getting and what kind of nutrition you're getting, and see if you're missing any of those key nutrients that could help you with your fatigue. And again, asking about supplements. If you have the name of a supplement, there are sites where you can see if there's been any information reported on that to see if it interferes with any of your medications. So, yes. Yes.
Sarah, I have a question for you. So you yourself as a nurse practitioner and a nurse, when you see MDS patients, so you understand that it's an aging, it's a disease of many who are aged.
Older patients.
Older patients who, again, as you said, have more fatigue, less energy, and many of them are no longer driving. What kinds of programs or exercise options do you offer them or suggest? And do you even suggest at-home physical therapy, a physical therapist to come into the person's home to help them?
Yes.
Can you give us some ideas about that?
Thank you. It's coming up. So things that I do for my patients that I recommend. I do recommend that if they're not walking at all, that they set a certain number of steps today for that week to try to get to slowly improve how much they're moving. You knew where it was going. So exercise is the single most important way to combat fatigue. And you want to ask for a referral to a physical therapist trainer or a physical therapist or a trainer that can develop a tailored program. They can do exercises in the home. Some of the patients dovetail it with their appointments with me to where they see the physical therapist afterwards, and they can do some little bit of cardio with, you know, walking, or even some light weights if needed, or resistance bands. They can do it sitting, standing. We also have a balance clinic for people who are having problems with, you know, they feel like they're going to fall. And I've referred some patients to them, and they haven't had any falls since then. And that's really scary with the low platelet count, is thinking that you could fall and really injure yourself. You want to think of eating light before bed because of the amount of, some patients really talk about this a lot with MDS that are anemic, that they feel worse after they have a big meal. A lot of your blood goes to digest your food. So, you know, like eating small, frequent meals throughout the day can help.
What do you do? I have MDS, and since I was, I'd say the last few months, I have no appetite. And I've lost quite a bit of weight. I just have no appetite to eat anything. I have to force myself to try to eat something, and I know I don't consume a lot of calories a day. And I used to be a big eater at one time.
Yeah, that can make a big difference if you're not getting enough calories, because that'll make it spiral and get worse. So sometimes I have patients, even if they don't feel like eating, just taking boosts or find one of those supplements and making sure that you're getting your calories in, because nuts are full of nutrients, and you don't have to put a lot of effort into eating them to get.
One other thing I wanted to ask you, I had heard that, I remember years ago, I never wanted to take too much B12 because it gave me too much of an appetite. At that time I was worried about being too heavy. I started taking that again, and I noticed it did help a little bit. That wouldn't hurt the
nope.
Hinder the MDS?
No.
No, okay.
B12
that did
is,
help a little
is helpful.
Bit.
In fact, when you have a high MCV, which if you look on your complete blood cell count, a high MCV means that your red blood cells are large, and B12 deficiency should be checked in all MDS patients to make sure that you don't have B12 deficiency, because it can mimic as having myelodysplastic syndrome. I had a patient that was on lenalidomide that we had a firm diagnosis of myelodysplastic syndrome, and then I discovered he had B12 deficiency, and we gave him the B12, and he didn't need the lenalidomide. So you want to make sure you don't miss that if someone has a B12 deficiency. Yes.
No, I don't have a B12 deficiency.
I have a question. Actually, I have two, but as far as alcohol is concerned, what is an okay amount? Like, my husband and I enjoy a glass of wine, maybe two, during dinner or something. Is that too much alcohol to be consuming? He has.
Generally, no, in moderation. But if you have someone who comes in with all their blood counts are low, that's one of the things you look for, is how much alcohol they
it can lower the blood counts.
It has a negative impact on your bone marrow in large quantities, but usually two glasses of wine a couple of times a week is not considered excessive.
Okay, also, talking about your immune system, do you believe, like, probiotics are helpful to take to.
There is a lot of data about probiotics. I haven't seen it studied with myelodysplastic syndrome, so I would ask your individual doctor. Your GI tract is a part of your immune system, and
we had been to an emergency room for a dog bite, but we had been talking to the doctor because it was during the flu season there, and this was down in Florida, and there were so many people coming in and they were sick, and I just said to him, how do you stay well? You know, you're seeing all these people.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he went to the internet and he showed me a picture of, you know, Danone yogurt. Well, they have these tiny little bottles and they're called Danaerobics or something. It's in the supermarket, it's not right with the yogurt. It's just a little bit down, maybe with some like that Activia and stuff. Mm-hmm. And he said, I drink one of these every morning. And it's not a big deal. It comes in a yellow case of about 8 bottles in it. And so we started doing that, because I don't believe that could hurt you. If anyone has a feeling that it might conflict with something, they could ask their doctor. Mm-hmm. But we've been doing it for a while now, and it's really helped us to feel better. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, just something like that, and probiotic, right. And in a simple little...
Right. I know there's a lot of over-the-counter, like a line is one of those. Yes? You're talking about cannabis?
It's called cannabis.
Cannabis? Yes.
I mean, there, marijuana.
I think there are, there's people that I know that are taking it who have MDS, but they're getting it from,
for legal, of course.
Yes. I haven't seen studies on that. No, and Moffitt has a policy. They haven't really endorsed it so far. They say the data is conflicting.
Well, it sounds funny, but I was being serious.
Yeah, I do think that for some patients it does benefit them. But I don't know where you get it. Like loss of appetite, like she was talking about, things like that. Okay, you want to track your blood counts. We already talked about this. Both of the doctors before me discussed this. This is the most common disorder that we see with myelodysplastic syndrome. It contributes to the fatigue, but like we said, it's not all just about the hemoglobin. They do talk about, there's evidence, there's studies that show people with low platelet counts have fatigue. The underlying mechanism, I don't know. We understand with hemoglobin, it's that you're not carrying as much oxygen. But there's something with the platelets and white blood cell count also. So how can you avoid infections? Well, be aware of what your neutrophil count is in your blood work and see if it's, you know, above 500, above 1,000, severely neutropenic. He talked about 200 being okay when you have myelodysplastic syndrome. I see some people that have like 10 for a neutrophil count. For sure they're at increased risk for infection. And you know if you get a fever when you have a really low white blood cell count, that's considered a medical emergency and you need to seek healthcare attention immediately if you have a fever. You want to avoid people who are obviously ill, especially those viral type infections, because we don't have, you know, something that we can give you to get over a viral infection. For example, I have a lady that I see every week, and she had a parainfluenza infection. There's nothing I can really do to help her other than support her symptoms. Washing your hands often, carrying those hand sanitizers in your pockets, pocketbooks, or in your pocket. And then you do want to get the flu shot every year. And the pneumonia vaccine. It has the shingles vaccine as not being recommended, but there is a new shingles vaccine now that is not a live vaccine, so that one would be fine. Say it so everybody else.
Shingrix.
Right. And so that's not a live virus. You could have that one for shingles. You need two of them? Tell us how you got it. And what time period apart?
2 months.
2 months apart.
Yeah.
Well, one and then another one no sooner than 2 months and no later than 6 months.
Okay.
Is it Medicare coverage?
Yes.
He paid $8 for his.
Oh, that's yes.
$8 is not bad for most people. INGRIX. It's SHINGRIX, I think. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we have given it to some of our patients. There are quick tips in your MDS manager that you can go to and look for. Like we were talking about fever and infections, like what the guidelines are. Neutropenia. Severe neutropenia is when the neutrophils are less than 500. If you look at your neutrophil count, if it's less than 0.5, then you're less than 500. And if your total white blood cell count is less than 0.5, then you have to be neutropenic because it's a subset of the type of white blood cells you have. And then neutropenia is less than 1,500. There's different layers of neutropenia. So severe is less than 0.5 or 500. Thrombocytopenia, we talked about this. This is when your platelets are less than 100. Really, your risk of bleeding increases when your platelet count falls below 50,000. What's really important to remember is that platelets make your, you know, they plug the hole when you have an injury, and then more platelets come to the site to really keep that hole plugged. And so when you take something that makes your platelets not stick together, that's a double risk for bleeding. So if your platelets are less than 50, you really are an increased, like double increased risk if you're taking any blood thinners that are prescribed. So you would want to call your doctor if you're on Coumadin, Xarelto, or Eliquis, or if you take Plavix, and let them know that your platelets are less than 50. In some patients who have newly placed stents, they will still have you take them until you're less than 30,000. But that's really an individualized decision. You just need to make sure that they know what your platelet count is. And you want to avoid injury or falls. If you fall and hit your head, you need to be, and your platelet count is less than 50, you need to have your head imaged or someone really evaluate you and make sure you don't have a bleed in there. And then over-the-counter medicines that we don't always think of that we take regularly, aspirin, any of your non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, those make your platelets not stick together. So you want to avoid those when your platelets are less than 50,000. And then you see the reference range, 150 to 400,000 is normal. So also any of your other, yes?
Do steroids affect the platelet count?
Her question was, do steroids affect the platelet count? Yes, steroids usually help platelets. That's one of the treatments for people who have immune thrombocytopenia or idiopathic thrombocytopenia. They'll give steroids to help the platelet count go up. But platelet steroids do kind of thin your skin and have other risk factors, you know, because they will tell your immune system to quiet down, and so you might not know when you have a serious infection. I just lost a dear patient of mine with myelodysplastic syndrome from therapy for her lung cancer, and she was on steroids to help with energy, and she got a Pseudomonas bacteremia and died just recently, but she never got a fever, so we didn't know till it was too late. So you have to be careful with steroids and realize that you might not get the normal signs and symptoms when you do have an infection. You want to stay connected with your primary care provider and have good communication between your hematologist and your primary care person. Keep a list of your current medications. I try to go over my patient's med list every time because your medications can affect your blood count. Like we said, the steroids can make it look better. And then the World Health Organization recommends that all patients with a life-threatening illness can benefit from palliative care. This doesn't mean that you give up on living. Palliative care means that you focus on preventing suffering and improving quality of life. And one of the ways that you do that is by managing your symptoms. I think some of the good studies for fatigue management are going to come out of palliative care. And they have specialized training for these. They're also called supportive care medicine now. And we have that at our institution at Moffitt, where patients can get referred if they're having uncontrolled symptoms or they're not sure what they want to do if things are getting worse, to where we can have ongoing dialogue. Caregivers are an essential member of our team. We want our caregivers to remain healthy, focusing on their exercise, sleep, and nutrition. sometimes relaxation, meditation. One of my primary mentors for my NIH grant has studied mindfulness-based stress reduction in breast cancer patients and had statistically significant improvements in fatigue and symptoms just based on going through yoga-type exercises. So it sounds frou-frou, but the studies really show that this is benefiting patients if it's done in the proper manner. You know, the studies are tightly controlled. And treatment for depression and anxiety, and you want to strike a balance each day. So I would recommend, like, carving out time for you, you know, and enlist friends to help you so that you get some relief. And to try not to worry all the time, that our own thoughts can be our worst enemies, I think. And ask for help. I think this is a good resource. I have a friend that just was diagnosed with multiple myeloma who's going to have a transplant, and I really didn't know how to help her. Well, now I have the answer. This is a painless way to organize help with your to build a team of support. You can see the link there, http://lotsofhelpinghands.com. It's a help calendar, and you post specific requests on there for support, and the members of the community can find ways to help you. You do have to have an organizer. Someone has to be the coordinator of the calendar. And then you add names and email addresses. So I'm going to try this with my friend and see if we can help her during her transplant. Because she doesn't like to ask for help. But if she just posts that she has a need, then that makes it less, you know, you can do it as you have time. And then these are additional resources that you can find in the MDS Manager. And you know that we find all of these new and wonderful treatments through clinical trials, where we don't just tell you based on our opinion or one or two patients, but where they have specific numbers that they look to see if a new drug is going to be beneficial to a large group and it's statistically significant. So you can go to clinicaltrials.gov. There's also a new feature where there's a person that will help you navigate through there to see the trials that are available to you. If you went through all of the available therapies and are looking for another treatment, you want to know what your MDS profile information. You'll need to enter your age, your IPSS revised score, and your molecular profile. So your doctor or your doctor's nurse practitioner or doctor's nurse should be able to help you with that information. You need to enter at least your zip code, and then you'll receive information about clinical trials that are open that you could qualify for. And many of these are focused on mutation profiles now. I would say that's the hot new topic. Like you heard, we opened a hot new clinical trial, and we have so many people on the list that we can't screen them all. There's not enough of us to screen them to get them going. But there's a spliceosome inhibitor, and you have to have specific mutations in those spliceosomes to qualify for that trial. So your healthcare provider could help you learn whether you have a spliceosome mutation. Spliceosome. There's a list of them. It's a new type of, it's an oral treatment that just got started. So, but I know that ZRSR2 and I'm not sure all of the other mutations. I don't want to tell you wrong. I can remember three of them right off the top of my head. But if you ask your doctor, he should be able to tell you if you have a spliceosome mutation. Okay? You're welcome. And then this is your MDS profile, just a rundown of what's on there. You want your initial lab results, your bone marrow results. Initial means the your lab results at the time you were diagnosed, because that's how you come up with what your IPSS revised score is. Your bone marrow results, they really want to know from your bone marrow results the percentage of blasts, what your blood counts are, what treatments you've had. Transfusions are very important. Again, you heard that it's controversial whether you, well, relatively controversial, whether you chelate iron or not, whether you get rid of extra iron after transfusions. I think most of us are doing iron chelation because it can hurt your organs. So if you keep track of how many transfusions you had or your ferritin level, that will help you know if you have iron overload. Usually above 1,000 for sure, because a normal ferritin is way less than 1,000. And then the MDS Manager study. This is Sandy Curtin's study. You can register on the MDS Foundation webpage or on your smartphone or tablet after you download the MDS Manager. So she's seeing if this actually helps patients. It's a free study and you'll be tracked to see if it makes a difference for you. And then hope is a thing with feathers that perches in the soul and sings the tune without the words and never stops at all, from Emily Dickinson. And remember, we do have the MDS Patient Outreach and Advocacy Program, and the patient liaison is Audrey Hassan, and that's her email and her phone number. And then I think we're running low on time, so I'll turn it over to the next person. But thank you.